Hello, my love. Welcome to the Fairly Bold podcast. In a polarized world, many women are stuck in doubt and analysis paralysis because their dreams don't look like the stereotype around them. That's why we are unpacking the beliefs we have about womanhood, identity, and purpose, so you can feel confident about taking your next bold step and ditch the overwhelm. I'm your host, Eugenia Wu, but you can call me E. I'm so happy that you're here. I am so excited to bring you today's conversation with Esme Araresa. To some, Esme is a storyteller. To others, she is your fashion godmother. Professionally, Esme is a former entrepreneur who started her first business at 16 years old, sold it, and founded two more companies. At 26, she's switching things up in her career, and today talks to Fairly Bold about the journey of exploring your interests to find your passion, the fear and the road to pivoting, managing career transitions, coping with expectations and even criticism because of your path, and my personal favorite part of this whole interview, how to gain confidence to take your next bold step. She went through her frameworks, through really great encouragement. I know you're going to love this conversation. You can find Esme on Instagram at toldbyesme and on Clubhouse, where she's one of my favorite people to follow. I know you're going to love this conversation. Remember to share your favorite part on your stories. Welcome, Esme, to Fairly Bold. I feel like this is the Academy Awards and I just rolled out my red carpet. I'm super happy that you're here. And man, I had to really structure my ADHD brain to get concrete with you because, woman, you can write a series of books about so many different topics, and I'm so glad that you would give me your time to talk with my audience.
No, thank you for having me. I've, you know, been a listener of the podcast and have been so in awe of the wonderful women that you have spoken to and also the wonderful perspectives that you have explored. I think your way of thinking is one that is valuable to follow. And so around that, I'm very happy to be on your podcast and hopefully be able to, you know, replicate that same kind of storytelling and value adding that you do on your podcast. So thank you very much for having me. I am currently wearing an outfit that might not be exactly red carpet ready, but that's why it's a podcast.
That's the beauty of podcasts. You're always red carpet ready, as long as you don't have a cold.
Right, exactly.
I want to start, and this is very like podcast 101, and I try not to ask this question because usually people are like, okay, I don't want to hear your whole life story. But you are a person who has a very interesting journey of pivoting, of trying different things, of feeling like your friends and your peers were taking different paths as you. And I think that that journey of exploring and pivoting and being brave to admit that you are taking a completely new step is very interesting. And so if you could give us the highlighted points of that journey, starting from just deciding what you wanted to do, daughter of an immigrant, and your mom telling you like, okay, you're not a good chef, a good cook, just be smart. and work hard so you can pay for a private chef.
You know, this is why I love Eugenia. She does her research. What she's referencing there with my mom telling me I'm not a good cook and I need a personal chef, so I need to, you know, get a high-paying job, is a little post that I wrote reflecting on, you know, making career choices as a first-generation immigrant. I think there's a quarter-life crisis that we go through as first generation, second generation immigrants, where until the age of about our mid-20s, we're very much doing what we were told to do or doing what we think is like the path towards, you know, financial freedom, economic success, or continuing the success that our parents have already set up, you know. And we come to this point in our mid-20s where we're like, but what do I actually want to do? What am I actually good at? So I was reflecting on that, and it's a post that I'm sure we can link to this if it will be useful to the listeners. But yes, indeed, when I was 7 years old, my mother was trying to teach me how to make pasta, and I was awful at it. And she was just like, yeah, you need to just continue being the studious person you are so that you can be rich and have a personal chef. And it didn't end there. Throughout my upbringing, I was just very studious, very academic, enjoyed all my subjects, didn't really know what I wanted to be. So I will tell you, I'm 26 right now, I just turned 26, and I only figured out what I want to be last year at 25. So what that has looked like is that I always chose qualifications and subjects that would help me to avoid specialization. So I would be more of a generalist. So what that looks like is studying the International Baccalaureate Diploma and then studying languages at university. And whilst I was doing that, because I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, I also started running businesses and sort of vehicle to explore my interests. So I had businesses in different things, in fashion and garment production, and also in fashion technology in terms of shipping luxury goods around the continent of Africa and the world. And I also had a wellness business alongside some other businesses where I was consulting people. In my businesses, I did sell except one of them, and the other two I just kind of, you know, left it to my co-founders and closed one to move on to the next thing. And that next thing is product management. Currently, I'm pivoting into product management. I am enjoying it. I'm doing things like participating in product hackathons, you know, doing courses and that sort of thing. And yeah, that's me. Entrepreneur turned soon product manager. That's the long short of the past 7 or 8 years of my career.
That is super interesting. And I want to ask you, do you ever feel like, or were you ever told that your generalization was going to affect you in your job or your career down the line because people were going to find it hard to classify you as an expert in something?
Yes, I think I've been told that implicitly. It hasn't ever been said to me so directly, but I think you find that, especially, you know, I'm speaking from the United Kingdom, and here they encourage young people to specialize very early. You know, you have to know what you want to do and pick your GCSEs accordingly in high school at the age of 16, and the same with your A-level. And I think that's that is a culture that it's definitely apparent in the UK, but it's, you know, becoming more and more apparent in other parts of the world. And I think that you're never really told you can't do and be everything so directly, but what you do find is that when you're ready to apply for a role, the requirements for a particular role are such that you should have known what you wanted to do maybe like 5 years ago and started doing qualifications and getting experience towards that. You know, there's that classic sort of challenge of you're a fresh graduate applying to entry-level roles that somehow require 2 to 3 years of experience. Well, then you're not quite an entry-level role, are you, right? So I haven't found people said to me, you know, you're generous and that's a problem. But what I have found is that perhaps hiring managers, perhaps mentors, perhaps people that you would want the sort of buy-in from as a candidate in the job market or as a participant in an education system, those people kind of struggle to understand the value of generalists. So that's what I found. I found it's a marketing problem for the generalists themselves. I've also found that it's a placement problem for the hiring managers, the mentors, and that sort of thing. So no, I haven't been explicitly told you're being a generalist is a problem, but it's something you figure out pretty quickly. And there are workarounds for how to be a generalist successfully. I think there are a lot of very successful generalists that we can learn from. But yeah, those have been my observations.
It's so true what you say. I think there is value in having that experience and that just a worldview where you have different areas that you can incorporate to your life. But I feel like there is a pressure, especially after your 25th birthday, to start having everything figured out. And you mentioned that you saw your friends going, they were doctors and lawyers, and you were still in this journey, and especially with your fashion career, and now you've pivoted again, but that doesn't mean that you don't love fashion anymore. So I'm wondering, I think a lot of women are in that same spot of, I want to do something different. That doesn't mean that I don't like what I had been doing up to this point, but I am just afraid that that's going to make me look inconsistent, confused, like I don't have a discipline, untrustworthy. How can a woman manage that, and how did you manage that?
Right. So I think, you know, I'm someone who, you know, for anyone who loves the Maya Briggs sort of personality sets, or, you know, just boxing personalities, in terms of me, I identify as what I have found to be an INTJ and a bit of a type A personality. And so I love questions like this, because instantly when I start thinking along these lines, I'm like, right, I need a framework. I need a way of working that's structured so that I can solve this problem. Sometimes problems can be so discreetly sorted and solved. Sometimes they can't. But what I do find with this kind of question is that it's a combination of both. And I think when you have a framework, it helps you to, it builds, it's more about building your confidence emotionally. Because one thing I'm confident of is that we can do and be many things. It's the nature of a human being. We are multifaceted. So it's not, can I do it or not? It's how confident do I feel about doing it? How ready am I to push back when people doubt me? How ready am I to demonstrate and put in the extra work to be of a higher level of competency at this one thing, as opposed to this other thing that is my comfort zone? So I think, you know, the frameworks that I'm about to talk about, they will do a lot for the confidence building, because you'll be able to prove to yourself that, yes, I can do this thing and here's how. Or, you know what, these are my weaknesses and this is how I'm going to work on improving them. So I will share those frameworks, but I will almost like give you a cheat code that you're only doing this work to improve your own confidence, because I think that's the biggest thing that we have to tackle.
I love it, because and sorry that I interrupt you, because I do want to mention that a few episodes back I talked about the confidence trap and how we can stay passive waiting until we are confident, but confident is a result of noting that we can do something. So I love that you're about to go into building confidence in order to take a risk. So I just want to emphasize that, and a person who's might be confused about the confidence topic, I think this part is going to be highly, highly relevant.
Right. I did love that episode. So as we're listening, please do go and bookmark that episode, The Confidence Trap with Eugenia. It was a brilliant one. But yes, these frameworks, they are practical things and processes that you can think through, that you can work through. The end result of them is really to build your confidence. So what are they? I think one of the most popular ones is something that has been misnamed, unfortunately. So if you Google the Ikigai diagram, Ikigai being a Japanese word spelled I-K-I-G-A-I diagram, you'll find this diagram that sort of organizes your life into these quadrants where there are things that cover what you love, things that cover what you're good at, what you can be paid for, what the world needs, and it sort of organizes them for you into your passion, your mission, your profession, and your vocation. I think this is a brilliant framework for really doing some internal work in terms of figuring out why is it that I'm pulled toward these things. I know that I'm already good at, for example, marketing, but I'm really right now becoming interested in the Internet of Things, and maybe within that space I want to be an engineer, and what is it that's really putting me towards that? I think this framework, the Ikigai diagram, is a really helpful one in terms of organizing all of those thoughts and interests in ways that can help you to better start telling your story and marketing yourself and pushing back when people doubt you. And it's also a good way for deciding for yourself if you actually really want to do this thing and which part of your life it fits into. It's called the Ikigai diagram. The reason I said it's been sort of misnamed is that it's the classic case of like someone on the internet finds something and then runs off with it without doing their diligence, you know? So Ikigai is a Japanese concept that is not so much really about this four quadrant diagram. The four quadrant diagram was started by a man who I believe is Spanish, and I cannot really remember what he called it, which goes to show the power of misinformation. But that's one framework that you can go and find by Googling the Ikigai diagram. Another one, more personally, and this is what I did initially. I developed my own framework, and I called it the LEADS framework, L-E-A-D-S. And this was a framework where I was reflecting on the legacy that I wanted to leave in the world, the sort of education and enterprise that I wanted to build or achieve. I was reflecting on how I articulate myself in the world. And when I say articulate, that's not just how I speak, but how do I communicate broadly? How do I present myself in terms of my fashion? How do I move my body? And what does that say about myself to people when I'm talking to them? Or even when I'm not actually speaking at all, like, what am I saying with my body? What am I saying with my clothing? What am I saying when I am saying things and speaking, right? So that's A for articulation. The D within the lead framework was for discipline. What are the disciplines that I want to really develop for myself? And then the S within the framework was for an idea that maybe we will come back to later for the sake of going through this. But it just kind of shows you that I was really reflecting, not necessarily on what are the jobs that I want to do or what is the career that I want to build, but rather, who am I in the world and what is it that I want to experience, to achieve, to add to the world? And this is a framework that I was reflecting on very slowly over the process of about a year and before I really gained that confidence, because remember, that's what I said this whole exercise of frameworking is about. Before I really gained that confidence about what my next steps are, what I really want to do, how the different things that all different many projects running around my head fit into this chapter of my life, or maybe the reasons for which that they need to be put on pause for future chapters. So yeah, those are the exercises I did. That's what I recommend to people. Whether you use the Ikigai process or the LEAD framework, or you go off and build your own thing or find something else, do that to really build your confidence. And I say that because I think that's one of the things that women struggle the most with. It's the confidence less than the competence. We are very competent people most of the time because we have to be. But what we do sometimes lack is the confidence. And when we have built that, we're better able to articulate why we deserve a space, why we can or how we will do a thing. So yeah, that's how I'd approach that for a woman who's going through sort of doubt or uncertainty about whether she should go after a thing or not.
That is super interesting, and it goes back in my mind. I was thinking about the millennial old debate of nature versus nurture, who you are, or who your society tells you to be, right? It's mm-hmm. It's complicated, and especially for women, when they're taking this framework, someone might start the exercise, right? And they want to know what brings them joy, what's their purpose, all of these aspects about their perception of the world. But then, because we are faced with this debate of, is this who I am, or am I being conditioned by society to want this? And sometimes women, especially the fairly bold women, are sometimes very different than what the stereotype might tell you. So I think that could be an initial challenge when building that framework of, this is the path that I want to take and this is a transition that I want to take. How can she identify this is society and these are your values? And I'm going to give you an example. At first, when I moved to the US, I've always been a very conservative person, not in the political sense, just in my personal life. And my friends in Venezuela were fine with that. And I had friends with different perspectives and worldviews. And I was always more conservative. They would call me like their grandma. And we were all cohabitating happily within that reality. But when I moved, I was told that if I wanted to be successful here in the US, I needed to let my prude ways behind. I needed to be, you know, use drugs and get drunk. And if I liked, I'm an early sleeper, but that wasn't cool here in the US. That was my first reality. So I shifted myself and I started and I wanted to become that empowered person that would be successful in the US. And then later it was a struggle because that's not who I was. But I thought that was just my society just making me be more conservative. But then I accepted who I was and my views and my perspectives, and I decided to live within my own framework once I realized that it was who I was. It wasn't, I didn't have to change myself to be successful in the US or to be accepted by certain people. And that journey took me 3 or 4 years. And I always wonder, how can a person who's trying to identify those values or those principles can be empowered or encouraged to turn off the noise for a little bit?
Right.
Yeah. And connect with what is true.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic question. And, you know, there's so many things that I have to say about this. And I'll try to keep them concise and things that are sort of like actionable for people to take away. The first thing I would say is that, you know, through the story that you shared around coming into America with a different sort of mindset and personality to most people, what I identified through the story that you shared is that it took some time for you to realize that this is who I really am, and this is what I really want. And there's something to be said for that. I think a lot of us try to connect the dots going forward, which is basically impossible. We do have to live our lives and then look backwards in order to be able to connect the dots. And so what I'm really getting at there is maybe to think a little bit less. Maybe just, you know, continue to live your life, continue to do the things that you think you want to do, and just keep an ear out. Continue to pay attention to yourself and listen to yourself. And soon you will be able to distinguish between what is truly from within and what is from the pressures of or from the influence of the outside world. There are two sorts of sound bites that have really been so transformative for myself in the past year or two of, you know, personal introspection. The first is a quote that I discovered via the book The Defining Decade by Megan Jay, which I recommend to everyone in their 20s and early 30s. It's a really brilliant book, but the idea is this, that the unlived life is not worth examining. And that's a sort of inversion. It's flipping the Socratic statement on its head, where it says that the unexamined life is not worth living. I really like that flipping of the script. Like, if you haven't yet lived your life, if you haven't yet tried to be a person in the world, or be the person that you've been nurtured to be, what do you have to contrast against? What do you have to compare? What do you have to measure to say, this is who I really am and here's who the world wants me to be? You have to first live, and then you can examine. And so that's what I say to a lot of young people, to some people who are my mentees, or to my peers who just for some reason think I'm very wise, and ask for my advice or my input on some challenges. And I think that we have a tendency as Zennials or millennials that we do a lot of time introspecting, which is fantastic. I think if the world had more introspective people, maybe there would be more peace. But I think when it comes to directing our personal life, the more time that we spend in our head examining what so far has been a short life, because, you know, for most listeners and most people in the Fairly Bold community, we are women of faith, and we understand what, you know, God's providence is for us, and it's that we should have healthy, full and long lives. So, you know, at the age of 20-something or early 30-something, your life is very far from over. Why are you stressing, spending so much time in your head trying to know all the answers when you can just live your life? Maybe wait till about 50 or 60 and then start examining and wondering. You know, like, we can do some preparation, we can do some thinking, but I think that it's important for us not to sort of become paralyzed, get this sort of, like, you know, analysis paralysis, where we're so scared of making the wrong move or making a move that we think is wasted time. I think if you're operating from a mindset that is abundant, then spending 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years exploring a personality or a culture that is external, that is the world, is not wasted time. It's time spent really building context. You're not starting from scratch when you come back and say, no, this is who I am. You're starting from experience. That's not a waste at all. So I would encourage us to get out of our heads, to live our lives a little bit more, and to wait a little while and connect the dots going backwards, not looking forwards.
That's, oh my God, that's so good. That is so good. I kind of wanted to end the episode there, like, bam, just aggressively, because that was so good. And what I'm hearing and processing is that we cannot be confident in moving forward until A, we accept the possibility of failure,
mm-hmm.
and reframe failure as in failure means that you are not worth as a human being, that, you know, failure doesn't, is not equal to your worth. And so you need to be okay with that. And you need to be okay with letting go of control.
Exactly.
I think those are two key items that I'm listening. You cannot be confident if you want to treat your life as an experiment that's predictable.
You can't. I think, I think it's definitely good to be prepared and to have a plan. But again, that plan is just building confidence up to a certain level for yourself. You plan just to prove to yourself that you're able. The reality of execution is that you're going to have to keep planning and iterating over and over again. You're going to have to be very agile and constantly pivot to the changing context that you're navigating in order to achieve success or to, deliver on the goals that you've set for yourself. So, yeah, we plan that, as soon as it's time to get going, those plans are very likely going to have to change very quickly. And it's about having that skill set, that sort of plasticity in our attitude to change whenever we need to, and to adjust and sort of like interrogate our facts, turn them on their heads and see what it is that we can, what wisdom we can draw, what learnings we can draw out of the changing environment that we're navigating.
Oh, I love that. I think it's very interesting. I think a lot of people are going to find freedom in knowing that, especially if you're a person of faith. I think there's a lot to be said about understanding that ultimately God is in control.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as we want to control everything, there's a point that goes beyond our power. So I think that's liberating for sure.
For sure. Yeah, it is.
I'm obsessed, and I want to end on this question. I want to talk quickly about femininity. And it all goes back to confidence, right? And pivoting and understanding and redefining your femininity in different seasons of your life. So this is a question that's, there's no right or wrong answer. I mean, Merriam-Webster dictionary might disagree, but I would like to know, what is femininity to you?
For me, femininity is an energy. It's an attitude. And we really could end it right there. We could. That's what I have to say on femininity initially. But if we did have to expand, I would say that it is an energy, it's an attitude. If you're someone who is, a femme person, a femme woman, you're feminine. And that really is the end of the discussion. I think that there's something going on at the moment in our media, in our social media, where there are so many different actors trying to define femininity in a way that is exclusive, in a way that can be quite restrictive, or in a way that is difficult for some people from other parts of the world or from other sorts of contexts to really fit into. And I think that all of that is a real waste of our energy. I think if you're a woman, if you're femme, you're feminine, end of. It's in your energy, it's in your attitude. It's not to do with what you wear. It's not to do with how you speak. It's not. And the reason that I say that is because, for so far, the sort of hegemonic understanding of femininity has been like pink frills, pearls, and all that good stuff. But if, for example, Marilyn Monroe is to walk in, a pair of denim, smoking, people are not going to suddenly believe that she's unfeminine. She's Marilyn Monroe, And the same for Michelle Obama. She's got these wonderful athletic shoulders, and some people have tried to insist that she's masculine, therefore. She's Michelle Obama. She is one of the most brilliant women in the world, a role model to so many. There are so many things and ideas that people come to certain women in positions of power, certain women who are visible, and try to use that to strip away from their femininity. And I think that is because, in essence, femininity is a very powerful thing. And so there are people who are going to constantly be picking at your femininity to say, you're not feminine enough. You're not feminine in the right way. And I think it's on us as women to ignore that and lean into our femininity. We don't have to try and fit into the pink and the pearls and the frills or the latest popular feminist sort of like sound bites and language and all that kind of stuff. If you're a woman and you're femme, you're feminine. It's an energy, it's an attitude. It's got nothing to do with how you speak, how you dress, and so on and so forth. So yeah, that's my thoughts very briefly.
I love that. This is amazing. Thank you so much, Esme, for coming. I'm going to leave your, if that's okay with you, I'm going to leave your book recommendation list down below because it is so eclectic. It is amazing. It has business, art, fashion, economy, tech, psychology. Is there a book? It doesn't have to be there. But is there a book that the woman that loves your way of thinking and just your perspective and outlook on life, is there a book that you would tell that person, like, you gotta go read today, go buy it now?
Whew, that is very difficult. And I think, you know, as we spoke about in the beginning, I'm a very curious person, I am a generalist, and so the perspectives that I have developed, they definitely haven't come from one singular book. But what I will say, I think a book that is very important to me right now in this chapter of my life, and that I think will be important to women who are in similar sorts of places to what we discussed in this episode, is, as I mentioned earlier, The Defining Decade by Meg Jay. That is just so brilliantly articulated. It has stood the test, you know, in book world, the test of time. I think it's only been about, you know, 9 years or 8 years since it was published, but that's a long time in book world.
Yeah, for sure.
So I love that book so much, and I really recommend it to anyone, you know, in their 20s, early 30s, and even people who might not be in that age range but have mentees, family members, loved ones, you know, in that sort of age range. I think it's important to try and build that empathy for one another in these times, because it's really, truly unprecedented times that we're navigating. I love that book. I recommend it.
Awesome. I love it. Where can people find you and connect with you?
Okay, so we have a flow going on. Mm-hmm. If you're interested in like the kinds of things we talked about today, you know, hashtag intellectual stuff, you can find me at Told by Esme on Clubhouse, mostly on Twitter and on Instagram. And if you've got more of a passion for fashion, you can find me on Instagram at Ask Your Fashion Godmother. That's where I am on the internet.
That is awesome. And I'm gonna post some of your reviews for Clubhouse, because my people, I'm not a fan of Clubhouse, but I might consider joining more actively. Thank you for your time. And I hope that I can see you very soon again. I know that I'm gonna have a lot of questions about this episode, Esme. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining today. I loved this conversation with Esme. I loved how insightful she is. I love how amazing she is at connecting the dots and really encouraging us to take that next bold step and to really enjoy living our lives one day at a time, explore different paths. And yo, how cool was that Ikigai diagram model? It was amazing. I'm going to share it on my Instagram. So please go follow at eugenia.wu and fairlybold. Of course, please follow and subscribe for free to this podcast. It means a lot to me. So you will get notified. The episode will be downloaded instantly so you can hear the episode when you're working out, when you're cleaning, when you're cooking, when you are... Sometimes we don't really want to work. Like we're pretending that we're working, but our minds need a little break. That's when you need to listen to this. So subscribe so you don't miss one episode. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, that would be amazing. You just go to the bottom of the page, you hit the 5-star, write a couple of words about your favorite part of the episode, and that would mean the world to me. And as always, you can find this and more information and more resources just for you at fairlybold.com. Thank you for joining me, and I can't wait to see you back next week.